if people have access to this information, if they can get your programs, if they can get get this information, they don't need to be an expert. They can be a high school student. That is, you know, they don't need to be have a degree in electrical engineering or chemical engineering or a biologist or anything like that. They can just with a little of trial and error and learning as you go, take this information, load it into AI, and quickly have an understanding of the environment.
You're listening to Protect It All, where Aaron Crow expands the conversation beyond just OT, delving into the interconnected worlds of IT and OT cybersecurity. Get ready for essential strategies and insights. Here's your host, Aaron Crow.
Hey, thank you for joining me on another episode of Protect It All podcast. This week, I love having these conversations with folks that I've become friends with through this crazy thing that we called OT and cybersecurity. My friend Don, we've been around for a while, both of us, and I can't even know how long we've met each other now. But it's fighting in the same places and doing the same types of things in different spaces, and it's always fun to have these conversations. So, Don, thank you for joining me today. It was kind of last minute, but I appreciate you being flexible and coming on the podcast and sharing with us today.
No worries, man. This is I enjoy doing this. I enjoy talking about this stuff. We got to get the message out there. So I'm always happy to jump on planned or unplanned. It's no worries. So I'm happy to be here. Yeah, thank you.
So give us a little bit. If folks don't know who you are, obviously you've been on the podcast before, but give us a brief overview of who you are, kind of what you do, whether IT, OT, just kind of that over high level, 50,000 foot view.
Oh, absolutely. I've been doing, ever since I got out of the Marine Corps in 99, I went into computers, got my degree, and I knew I wanted to be a cybersecurity professional. Kind of worked through my career over the last some years, since that was 2002 when I graduated. I've gone offensive and defensive. And, I'm a defender at heart. I do like to defend. I started with doing a forensic analysis. I've run incident response teams, but I always knew as a Marine, I always knew that, understand your weapon systems. Computers to me are weapon systems. It's, they could be just depend on what your mission is. And so as a defender, I've always wanted to understand that operational. How are things? I know how to find people. I didn't know how people are actually doing things, attacking systems, taking advantage of them, and so forth. So I went and learned the offensive side, and I realized I have the evil bit, I'm able to take advantage of things. So I've been doing that pretty much for the last 8 years as a part of Cutaway Security, doing security assessments, penetration testing. I also do security research. A part of what I do is I like to, as we're doing here, get that education out there. I teach for SANS. I teach the ICS 410 class. And more recently, and kind of what I'm moving into, is teaching the 613 class, which is the ICS OT penetration testing and security assessments. I'm a co-author with Jason Dealey and Tyler Webb. And we've kind of brought our, Jason's really the OT kind of side. He's a builder of things. Tyler has worked in the electrical industry. He's got, gone from IT pen testing over to the OT pen testing, and so running their team over at Dragos. And I've always been that security assessment, kind of like the doing security assessments, security maturity evaluations, and pen testing. So across the board, to include security research and so forth. So that's kind of how I built up. That's where I'm at right now, teaching the 613 class while also doing assessments and on the side.
That's awesome. I know, both as an asset owner, when I worked at a power utility, unfortunately or fortunately, whatever you want to look at it, I've got enough gray in my beard. I've been around longer than they actually had OT training courses, right? We didn't have anything that SANS had classes. They weren't OT specific, right? It was before Dragos existed. Like, there was all this type of, right? So the fact that we're having training courses that are dedicated to OT, and we're growing them, right? You talked about pen testing. And, I've done pen tests in OT spaces, and they look completely different than what I do in an IT space, right? It's not the same thing, because there's different risks, right?
Absolutely.
It's the same thing. If I'm, if I'm on a range, I'm not taking the gun and pointing it at me and pulling the trigger to see if it's loaded. Like, that's dumb. I'm not going to do that.
And that's exactly what we're talking about in the class. And it's actually hard for people to, you know, because it's a 600 level class and they're like, okay, we're going to be, you know, on keyboard, you know, taking down systems. And we're like, whoa, slow down. We've got to help you understand how all of this actually plays into, a pen test is just a part of a vulnerability management program. It's understanding what I like to call, I don't like to call them vulnerabilities anymore. I like to refer to them on the OT side as implementation issues, you know, because it's just deploying the technologies we've selected for that problem to achieve a goal, you know, and it's just, we've configured it in a certain way. There might be issues there. We need to identify and kind of reduce some of the security risks in those implementation issues. Some of them are vulnerabilities, but we tend to eat those vulnerabilities. We tend to choose to live with them. So while the class does have a heavy technical, you know, we expect you to be ready to go command line. We also expect you to be able to read documentation, read vendor documentation, understand. I mean, one of our first labs is looking at two solutions for wireless implementation, identifying the security requirements for implementation. You know, basically you're being told we're picking one of these solutions. You don't get to pick, but tell us what we would need to do if we were deploying it. And it's basically, you know, okay, if you pick this one, you have to configure these things. If you pick that one, you have to disable this and configure those things. So coming out with those security requirements. And that's what we're teaching people. And they, you know, but they expect to be full blown. All right, show me how to exploit this exploit. We demonstrate some of those things, but really we want to talk about what is valuable. And that's the thing that Tyler brought to it is, you know, I've always talked about, you know, reducing risk and stuff like that. One of his first like modifications to some of my input was like, hey, we need to talk about value. What is the value? What are we evaluating it? And why is it valuable that we're looking at that? We're providing information around that. And so we've worked that, we've weaved that into all of the different labs and the different sections and talking about value to the actual process, whatever you're trying to defend.
Yeah. And it's so important to understand that because as nerds, I self-defined nerd, geek, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's fun to get in the nitty gritty and go break something and, you know, do a capture the flag and make the thing break or turn red or whatever the goal is. But on the flip side, if I don't really understand the business process, if I don't understand the why, if I don't truly understand the risk, I may be trying to trip the wrong thing. Meaning, you know, how many of these attacks do we see that they come in, you know, Colonial Pipeline, all these types of things, you know, I've had this argument 1,000 times with people, and comments that come in and podcast episodes I've done talking about Colonial Pipeline. Well, that wasn't an OT attack. Okay. But it shut down the pipeline. So does it matter? Right. It doesn't matter. Right. It's not about, did it get to layer zero in the OT process? No, it didn't. Mm-hmm. But did they shut down the pipeline? Yes, they did. So it impacted OT. Yeah. So it was an OT attack.
Yeah. And it is really kind of helping people understand that and think around that. We want people putting packets on the wire. You know, there's a place for there's a place for information gathering. You know, there's a place for efficacy testing, meaning that, you know, are our countermeasures firing the way that we expect? And really, you know, so many times we're deploying all of these environments are getting new solutions implemented very rapidly. So what gaps did we not realize we were inducing? What extra risk? That doesn't come out on piece of paper sometimes. Sometimes that actually, somebody needs to look at it. Somebody needs to send a command and go, oh, this data. So, and one of my biggest things is workflow. And, how can I affect data at this location and where is it going, right? I can send a command and turn off a PLC. Like you said, that might not matter, you know, and the operator is going to say like, I don't really care. But then when I turn around and say, oh, well, I can modify the time of this packet as it's being stored in the database. How does that affect it? And you want to blow engineers' minds, tell them you're messing with time, you know, in their actual data set. Yeah, it's, you know, it's that whole workflow. And that's kind of what we talk about, whether it's in the material or whether it's, I mean, the great thing about coming to a SANS class, like actually coming to a SANS class, is that you get Jason, myself, or Tyler. And you get to, we give all of our real world examples as we've gone through and done this over the last, you know, each of us, so the last 15 years. We've got great examples and we're able to, you know, to actually talk about operational risks. So.
Yeah. And that's where the rubber meets the road, right? You know, again, training is important. Going to these classes, it's way beyond just the things that you're going to learn, the networking that you're going to build, the relationships you're going to build. Like it all comes back to that, right? It all comes back to, hey, I remember Don said he had that experience before when I'm having the same problem 6 months down the road, having those connections that I can reach out to. Hey, we're having this issue. You said you had this issue, right? What did you do in those scenarios, right? And then being able to see things from a different lens. And that's where, you know, we've talked about diversity for forever. And for me, that word diversity means having a different perspective because I'm coming at it from different ways. And that's why you just talked about all three of you guys have different backgrounds and different experiences. That's what makes the class that much more powerful, right? If you all had the exact same background and history, it would be good in that very specific and generic, or not generic, very specific and targeted way, but it's not going to be as broad and be able to cover all of those perspectives and have as deep of an understanding, which is really what it gets into when I'm building a program, when I'm doing an assessment, when I'm doing all these things. I need to have those understandings of things as we go facing any of the problems or solutions that we're really going after.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that's been difficult about this class is that every student's at a different area. They're coming at it from a different approach. You know, some of them are OT and have been doing OT pen testing for a while. They want something new. They want to go, you know, learn some of the more advanced skills. They actually know how this vulnerability detection, it, you know, fits into a security program. But then we also have people like that don't know what a security program is, and you know, and there's no like, okay, well, here's vulnerable. I mean, outside of 62443's explanation as a part of their path to a security program, and theirs is just high level. Here's what our standard recommends is the core of these things. You know, organizations are like, how do we do this? How do we do a security program? How does vulnerability assessments fit into that? And it's not starting at a pen test. And so some people are actually having a difficult time realizing that, hey, we're teaching you not only how to do the assessment, the active stuff, which is a part of it. We're teaching you how to do that passive, you know, come up with a vulnerability program. Here's how it all fits together so that it's actionable. Because going back to the value thing, having a pen test and showing that you can get shell on something or turn something off, that doesn't matter. We have to get that information to the people that can make a difference, help them understand the risk, help them. And actually, I added to the class recently talking about CapEx and OpEx. And people are like, why are we talking about that? Well, you know, your expenditures, first of all, they never had a pen test because they didn't have that planned into the OpEx. Okay. Everything you're going to tell them is they're going to say, okay, what tool, what capital expenditure addresses this? And you're going to say, no, you need a new change management system to keep track of things better. And that is OpEx. They're like, well, we don't want to do that. We want to buy something. What is the, you know, you know, and so helping people understand, hey, you're going to have these conversations. You need to realize the history. How did things get there? And that's one of the things that the SANS leadership course really taught me is, because I took the strategic one at 514, and they really talk about, yes, it is important on how an organization got to the point that they're at, meaning that, you know, like what decisions were made that made it vulnerable? What decision? Why did we give this remote access? Was it because of COVID? Is this because it's a vendor requirement? Was it because it's a vendor requirement and now they're doing it via the cloud, so that's no longer actually necessary? What is the history for how something grew into what it was? That's important because that is how you're going to, okay, is this the same? Is it different? Are we better? Are we worse? Hey, leadership, here's the full picture. So it's, and so understanding, so, it's been a challenge trying to put it in a palatable kind of format. I think we've got it. Like everybody that takes the course say that they learned something. One of my favorite students was a very technical student. I mean, he was through the labs the whole time. We're like, hey, are you bored? Do you want to sit, you know, do you want me to give you something else? Cause I got some other things, you know, that I can have you look at. And he actually did in the class, he looked at some things for us. But at the same time, he's like, no, he's like, I know how to do all this technical stuff. What I'm getting out of this is soft skills. And I can just listen and I can do technical stuff on the side. I'm getting all of the soft skills. How do you talk about it? How do you approach this? What's valuable? What's not? How do the things I know how to do fit into an actual program? And so that's all built into this course. But once again, it goes back to what is that individual? You know, we had to build a course to an industry, not to specific individuals. And it's been a challenge going forward, but I'm super proud of what we've done and where it's at. And I'm really hoping that, you know, it's by the beginning of next year that we'll actually have one of the GX certifications associated with it. You know, it's we're just getting that stabilized. Also, GX got to figure out how they're going to do the whole, like, well, how do you prove DCS, right? You know, that you can interact with it. So it's, So they've got to figure out some stuff on the certification side, but we're definitely getting there. It's a great course and I can't wait to see people there.
That's awesome. And man, it's so needed. And to your point, and a couple of things I really want to dive into there. You talked about the soft skills, and I talk about that all the time, right? You could be the smartest person in the world on the technical thing, but there's so much more that goes into this. That's bigger than just the firewall configuration or the PLC or the network switch or whatever those things are. But the other piece that I really wanted to dive into is you talked about CapEx and OpEx, right? So many programs, in my perspective, are won and lost there, right? It doesn't matter what technology you choose, how well it's implemented, any of those things, because really it comes down to if you didn't ask 3 years ago for the right amount of money, you're not going to have enough money to set it up, and you're going to be constantly chasing your tail. Like, I can't tell you how many places I get called from as a consultant. I get called from these fairly large organizations that make, you know, millions, multiple, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue a month and more. Mm-hmm. And they don't have enough money. I can't afford to do that. Like, what do you mean? You, like, obviously the organization can afford it. It's not that the organization can't write the check, because obviously they could. It's that they haven't budgeted well. They have not defined their risk and their needs well enough. So they set their budget at whatever, $100,000, $200,000, $1 million, 10 million, whatever the number is. It's not enough. And now it's too late to go ask for more. Right? It's always harder after the fact. And the second piece to that is they may have asked for, they have a big CapEx budget, but they have a very limited, you know, OpEx budget. And that we see that especially in power utilities a lot, but all companies deal with it as, you know, hey, I can go spend $15 million in CapEx. Mm-hmm. But then once it's installed, it isn't maintained, because I have $0 in OpEx that when the consultancy comes in or Dragos or whomever it is that comes in and sets the thing up, I buy a widget, I buy software, I buy a consultant to come in and install it. And then we're done and I hand you the keys. You don't have anybody to drive the bus. Well, so it just sits there and dies on the vine because they don't have the OpEx to actually run it. They don't renew their licenses, right? All of that stuff. It's so frustrating.
And that's because, I mean, this industry, they're used to seeing output. You know, they're used to seeing a service being produced, widgets being produced. What is cybersecurity? What do countermeasures produce? They don't produce anything.
Yeah.
So once you get in place, it's like, okay, it's silent. I don't hear any alarms. It's working. It's doing its job. It's protecting me. So it's not producing anything. So it's difficult. And you know, it's really, I don't want to say it's not their fault. Yes, people were not planning for this 5 years ago. The electrical utilities, actually, they were starting to plan. I mean, the reason why I have this job is, you know, back in 2010, before 2010, they were asking these questions, which is why they're ahead of the game in some of this stuff. But there's a reason, like Rob Emley, when during one of his congressional testimonies, he said that 95% of OPEX is for IT and 5% of it is for OT. You know, and that's got to shift. That's got to change. And that goes to planning. And that's why it's why I bring it up so much. CapEx, OPEX. It's in all of my conversations because I want that in people's brains. I want people thinking about it. What are we doing about this? Because that whole planning thing is, it's not, well, first of all, nobody's hiring me for pen tests if they haven't planned. And I think actually, the industry, I think, is realizing now, hey, the OPEX has dried up. You know, and there's not a lot of people asking for, you know, some people are doing it, but, you know, they weren't planning for, they thought they'd get more for their money or something like that, or they use that OPEX up. But yeah, I know a lot of people that aren't getting phone calls. And I think that's partially why they realize that they're getting some of this information. They don't really know what to do with it. You know, they've got, you know, if somebody that was doing it did it well, they gave them actionable things. But at the same time, once they take care of those things, they think they're supposed to be good, not realizing that this is supposed to be a sustained kind of program over time. And so they didn't necessarily, all right, we used our one shot OPEX and now what? And you know, this has to be a program that, and it's why the 62443 trainings out there, you know, secure, you know, a mature security program for OT, you know, they're saying that, no, this is a sustained program. You have to continue to do this. You have to have a process that's going out and doing security assessments, not a pen test, a security assessment, which is basically gathering information, understanding all of your assets, doing that document review, doing the vulnerability analysis, you know, all of those passive things, which we talk about in the class. Though you have to do those first before you even doing a pen test. And I think a lot of people got bit because they asked for a pen test and they're like, okay, here's the book of what you're doing wrong that people can take advantage of. And that wasn't helpful. And so having a security program that goes through this logical process of gathering information, having those discussions, one of the things that we really added to, and we're going to be pulling the thread on even more, is talking about that crown jewel analysis. You know, and we do it from a top down and bottom up. So bottom up, looking at the process and evaluating what's actually important there. From a pen test, you know, talking about, okay, how do we get to those points? What is our path to those important assets and data? So we are looking at it from a top down and a bottom up standpoint. And that should be one of the first things that they're talking about is doing some of that evaluation, individual processes. That would be that crown jewel analysis. But for larger organizations, plants and stuff like that, using that cyber informed engineering, following those processes from an organization standpoint, extremely important, but that's all OPEX. You know, the cyber informed engineering, everybody I talked to said, this is a year long project. What are we buying? We're not buying any equipment. that's all OPEX. And so it's, these are things that people haven't planned for. It's not making any money. It's not paying for itself. It's a ever increasing expenditure, but, people need to start getting good at this, better at this. They need to start thinking about this, talking like this, within their organizations, within their leadership, cause you know, practice makes perfect, you know, so. Yeah,
that's awesome, man. Yeah, and it really comes down to so many factors, and we get into OT, and we get in, and the next thing we're going to go into, obviously AI. We'll talk about that in a second, but you know, everybody focuses on AI and the newest, you know, Dragos and Nozomi and all those things, and all those things are great. I am not throwing shade at any of those. All those things are needed. We need good products. We need Rob Lee's out there. We need, you know, Edgards and those folks in Nozomi and everybody fighting the good fight. All of those things are needed. But many of the places that I go into have nothing. They haven't started a program. They don't have a budget. They don't have resources. They don't have technology. They don't have any of those things. And to your point, they're like, well, I've got 10 grand. What can I afford? I can get a pen test. Like they're trying to start somewhere, and that's not to say that you shouldn't do those things, because it's going to give you visibility. And help you to understand where your gaps are, what you don't know, all that type of stuff, right? But the biggest thing that you can do to grow your program or to have a program is to start having the justification that you need to get in front of leadership to justify funding CapEx and OpEx so that you can actually build out a program. It's not going to happen overnight, but that's the type of things that you're going to need. Sometimes that assessment is the evidence that you need from a third party. Cause if it's coming from Aaron, the OT guy, and Aaron always is, you know, Chicken Little, the sky's falling, the sky's falling, the sky's falling, but none of my stuff's ever broke. I can't tell you how many times they've said, oh, well, I've been running this plant for 40 years. We've never had a cyber incident. Why would I start now? That's just a big expense. I don't need that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fortunately, that kind of attitude is changing. And actually, that's one of the inputs that I got from Jason Dealey when I was teaching this class. He was like, look, Don, you've got to stop talking about how the OT side doesn't get it, you know, how they're challenged around these things and stuff like that. I didn't realize I was doing it. And he's absolutely right. People, I mean, when I go to organizations and I start talking about them, they're like, no, this is important. I understand that this is important. Now, I don't understand why you want to look there. I don't understand why you want to touch that. Help me understand that. But they're actually willing to give a lot of leeway. Hopefully it's because I've got a good explanation of what I want to do and stuff like that. So the industry is getting better. They realize that they need to do this. They just don't know how. And a lot of times they're just getting reports. And I'll even admit it. You know, you and I have worked together. You know, we can get very specific. Like, okay, this connection is you shouldn't do this. And it's just like, well, we don't know any other way of doing it, and we don't have time to do it. Oh, and what was great is that thing that we worked on, they sold it the next month. So now it's somebody else's problem, which is a thing that goes on to this in this industry. So it's, you know, there's so much dynamic, dynamicity around these things. You know, it's a challenge. You know, it's something that people need to get in front of to start asking questions. And the more you're asking questions, and look, you and I both know the ultimate goal is to keep things running, to keep producing that that service, to keep making the widgets or whatever you're doing. The ultimate goal is to do that. So just by having the conversation and talking about it, just by thinking about like, okay, what are we going to do in these cases? You're already moving in the right direction. But now it's a matter of like, how do we focus that very specifically to have value within this environment? So it's why I've gone away from I started talking like this 2 years ago. I kind of feel like Tim and Rob stole it from me a little bit, but when they came out with the five ICS controls, they didn't. They put it in a much more elegant way than I was putting it. And as soon as I read it, I was like, I'm golding. I'm latching onto this. We've built this into the class. I talk about it in all of my trainings, which is, you know, but of course, I'm that security researcher. I'm that exploiter, that pen test. You know, a lot of people like to talk about you need to be ready with incident response, you know, doing your crown jewel analysis. I think that's important. But if you had to have tactical right now, what are you going to protect right now? What would you pen test right now? I would say your remote access. What is your remote access? Because there's only one way for me to affect any of the things that we've been talking about. And that's I have to get packets on the wire. So how do I do that? Is it through your corporate environment? Is it through some type of jump host? Is it through wireless, right? So if I want to affect you, I have to get packets on the wire. And so remote access is the first thing I look at, talk about, then it's authentication, then it's segmentation, stuff like that. So it's if we focus on those things, if organizations, it's so easy to think about cybersecurity from an IT perspective in this because it's IT technologies. But we can't have that approach. And actually IT is, we've over-engineered, you know, and I think that's part of the problem is we've over-engineered IT security. There's so many domains and I'm not saying any of them are not, you know, every one of them is important because every technology is different, But if we need to be tactical right now, what are we going to address right now? We need to simplify. And so I think all of our industries, you know, from electrical all the way down, we have to simplify right now. Starting with the five critical controls, especially remote access, I think is hugely important. And then slowly work your way down to the process. Absolutely. But you can't have effect on target if you can't send packets. Right. And all of these successful exploits, you know, they've, all of the reports that Nozomi and Dragos and CrowdStrike are putting out about all of these things that are effective in the wartime, you know, over in the Eastern Europe, they're effective because they got remote access to something. They found some weird way that somebody hadn't thought of and they took advantage of it. Well, we can figure those out if we just start talking about it. If we start just looking at our network diagrams and taking a network diagram and looking at an operator and says, okay, what I see what's drawn here. What isn't on here? Oh, well, this isn't on there. Or this connection to that this third party vendor, they help us. Oh, really? How do they get in? Well, the cellular over here. Oh, really? So it's, and so it's really going in and asking those questions. And so you and I both know that is the true source of information. You know, network diagrams aren't the true source of information. Even a network scan's not true source of information. Talking to people and talking in a manner that they understand. That's the true source of information.
Well, and listening. My dad always told me, there's a reason why God gave me two ears and one mouth, right?
That's hard for me. That is hard for me. I do like to talk, right?
But all of that is so true. And it's not what you're always wanting as a technologist and a cyber security person, or if I'm trying to get an OT, like I want to go be a pen tester, I want to break shit, like all that kind of stuff, right? But if you want to have the biggest impact in your space, those are the questions you'd be asking. Like, those are the bigger picture conversations, the softer skills, which leads me to, you know, kind of the next piece. And I hinted about it and you and I talked about it a little bit before was how AI is impact. And everybody talks AI, and I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, every product's got an AI capability, but like we said, not everybody has large budgets. Not everybody's bringing in all these AI tools, but you're doing some really cool stuff with, you know, with labs, creating workflows. There's a lot of things that we can do as defenders in our space without, you know, putting our crown jewels into the cloud and ChatGPT and giving away the keys to the kingdom. But we also have to know that the bad actors, the nation state guys, they're going to be doing the same thing. Like the security by obscurity days are gone, right? I don't think they've been around anymore anyways, but they're really gone now because AI is going to help you. Hey, these people have GE and Emerson and Rockwell 5 and Fortinet and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Help me figure out a way through, and boom, 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 boom. It's going to give you at least ideas of how to do something, right?
More than it's way more than ideas. So that's actually one of the questions that we got in one of our classes is how are threat actors going to be using AI to understand the process? And when I say the understand the process, I mean actually understand the physical, like what's going on, what are the sensors, you know, the set points and the calculations and all of that. And because I've been fortunate enough, through ICS Village through some of the stuff that I've been able to do with SANS, I've actually evaluated that and I know I'm going, and look, I like to do a lot of things from like the street level, meaning that, I don't have anything fancy. You know, I'm either paying for stuff out of, you know, my own pocket. You know, I've got a new server that I'm trying to, bring in my own, AI development and learn how people are building their own, framework models for pen testing. But at the same time, while I was doing that, I was just like, hey, first, I wanted to. So, ICS Village had a table that they built, Tom asked me to do some labs for them, and I went and talked to the operator that programmed the table, and I was like, "Hey, man, how did you program this logical loop?" And so he was just like, okay, so the HMI queries this, you know, this, and then, you know, and then it just does some math. And so he knew how to do it. I mean, everything worked beautifully. He didn't know how to describe it to me. I was like, so do you have this written down? He was like, well, yeah, it's in the program. It's in the PLC. It's written down there. I'm just like, can you write a paragraph describing what your control loops are? I was trying to get really specific. And he was like, I just did. I'm like, God. So I was like, fine, I got to do that. And I'm used to doing this because I think differently. And really, basically what he didn't understand is where was I going? Even though I described it to him, he didn't understand that. I wanted to know what the logic loops were in there so that I can start thinking about ways to take advantage of the situations, you know, remotely. And, you know, this thing was built with minimal logic and I don't want to say it was built with vulnerabilities, but things that you could take advantage of. And so because he couldn't tell me, I was just like, fine. And I had access. I had access to each one of the programming softwares. There was three different PLCs that they're using. And I went in there and I was just like, okay, I'm going to export this to text. Well, there's no export to text. I think one of them had export to XML. Right. But everything else was the configuration file that had the actual logic in it was a binary file. Right. It's which is you could probably go and write your own parser and stuff like that. But, you know, the AI is not going to help you. And actually, it might hit the guardrails. Right. So it might not actually do that analysis. So I was like, OK, so what else can I do? Oh, but I took a screenshot. I took a screenshot of the actual ladder logic. And pulled that in. I was like, hey, this is ladder logic, a screenshot of ladder logic from this type of PLC. And it's this type of process. I told it the type of process. I also gave it some parameters around, I know it's controlling temperature. I know it's controlling lights, and, you know, three or four other things. But I didn't, you know, I didn't tell it anything about the logic. I didn't tell it anything about the loops. And with that little bit of information, it came back. It gave me an evaluation of the ladder logic. It gave me evaluation of all the logical loops that were present in that code. And it's, I also exported the memory, the Modbus memory, and some of the other memory into a CVS format. They did have those capabilities. That's just a natural capability. And so I had all of the, how everything initialized. I had all of that information as well. And so it had all of the addresses for Modbus and for ENIP and so forth. And it gave me an evaluation of the code. It gave me an evaluation of the loops. It told me you know, what the alarms were. And if this change was made, if it reaches this temperature, this alarm would go off. But then it also said, but you can disable alarm or you can change the alarm values, the max and min of the alarm value. So if they change this alarm value, that means that you can set the temperature to this this will happen within the process. Oh, and by the way, here's a Python script to do all of that. Of course, it knew I was a security researcher. It knows that I like to run Python. And really, what I learned is I just need to tell it I'm a 20-year practicing penetration tester. Really, anybody can say that. I could have lied, right? It would think about the problem, approach the problem from that. So some of the things that I'm doing is kind of like helping to demonstrate that. Getting back to your point, you know, what does this actually mean? Well, first of all, if people have access to this information, if they can get your programs, if they can get get this information, they don't need to be an expert. They can be a high school student. That is, you know, they don't need to have a degree in electrical engineering or chemical engineering or a biologist or anything like that. They can just with a little of trial and error and learning as you go, take this information, load it into AI, and quickly have an understanding of the environment. Now, whatever their intent is, of course, that is up to them. But what this is really doing is this is reducing the time. You know, it's taking the internet, it's compressing all of that knowledge into a more a distilled area that can give us some valuable information. Are there going to be mistakes? Absolutely. But if you're a threat actor, do you really care? Well, it depends on what your motivations are and stuff like that. If it can get you close, right? That, and in this time, especially with what's going on right now, people want to act fast. I have access to this right now. What can I do right now? Right. And this is what, these are the capabilities that AI, is giving to these individuals that might not have any experience, within the industries. It's expanding it, making it more easily accessible, to them. So,
and that's terrifying, and also true, right? We know that. So what can people do in using those same capabilities? How can folks use that to benefit, to strengthen their space using the same tools that the bad actors would use against us? How do we take that AI and enhance what we have to limit our risk, to reduce our risk, to help our cyber posture?
Aaron, I'm not going to tell anybody to put their code in and have it analyzed, have the processes analyzed, have their configurations analyzed by AI. I do not recommend you do that. It's really not the whole point of that. To me, I really want people to focus on, I don't know, being an assessor and not being an implementer, not protecting an actual environment, it's difficult for me to see the benefits in some of the SOC tools and some of the endpoint tools that are leveraging some of the AIs. And really, the AI is allowing people to speak in normal conversational language, at least in my minimal experience. In other words, instead of needing to learn Splunk query language, they can just say, "Tell me the last 5 logins to our VPN." You don't have to remember the query language to get those. So you can speak. So AI is really, I think one of the benefits is making it some of that information more conversational quicker to turn around. But when we're talking about what should people be taking from what I just described, which is threat actors gaining an understanding of a process environment if they have that information. Well, all it's doing is it's providing them with information on how to achieve their goals. But there's still only one way to achieve their goals. And that's what we were talking about earlier, is they have to get packets on the wire. So just because they know better on how to affect the process doesn't mean that they just magically get to do that, okay? There's still going to be network-based artifacts, system-based artifacts. It's the artifacts don't change. So in other words, when I say, I'm sorry, that's the forensic person coming out of me, right? Indicators of unauthorized activity. So there has to be some type of network information, and system information. So somebody has to log in somewhere. Somebody has to start running programs. Somebody has to send packets. That's the only way to take advantage of that knowledge. And everybody's got, well, I wouldn't say everybody's got those things in place. Goes back to the CapEx and OpEx thing, right? But, the normal things that we would use to prevent, detect so that we can respond, all of that's the same. So fortunately, really all it's doing is it's being able to, it's speeding up some of this analysis. If they can get access to some of that data, it's helping them understand the things they can do on target faster. When it used to take months, maybe they had to go out and find somebody. They had to read a bunch of documents. They don't have to read documents anymore. Those documents are already read and they're getting the benefit of that information, as long as they know how to ask the right questions. But you can't prevent that. There's no preventing that. There's no putting guardrails up and stuff like that. There's ways around the guardrails. I mean, the reason why I have my own PC is to get around some of those guardrails as well for some of my analysis. And the threat actors are doing that as well. So, but don't focus on that. When we're talking about, understand that it's out there, understand that they're quicker, but our defenses are the same. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about that too much from an AI perspective. No, it's just being knowledgeable, and we're really getting a healthy dose of this. You know, we're getting, we're seeing if you're following the news, we're seeing how people are coming up with frameworks that will take a phishing attack, get a successful reply, check, you know, automatically check all of the breach notifications, associate with that credentials with the endpoints for the for that organization or endpoints at some other location to get in. And they're speeding up that chain of activities, which we've already known how to do. They're just making it faster and faster. They're making it more automated. In other words, they're getting quicker. But the ultimate issue around that is they're only successful if we allow them to take advantage of those things, if we're not monitoring for them and not responding. So really, if anything had to speed up here, that response, that detection and response, we need to be faster there, because once they get in, they're going to be able to operate faster, going back to monitoring, understanding our remote access. And one of the things is, you know, one of the things that always worries me the most is the authenticated unauthorized access, right? Because that's the hardest thing to detect. That's the hardest thing to, and they get the most value out of that. So understanding that is really important. Talking about that so people can actually get ahead of these things if they start talking about how are we detecting and responding to these things faster, rather than worrying about the fact that they're automating all of it.
Yeah, I mean, man, there's so much meat in this conversation for folks to think through, take home, you know, really figure out where these concepts and these ideas really fill into your space. Where are you at? Are you just coming up? Where can you take the right classes? Have the right conversations? Reach out to the right people? Are you in you know, knee deep in alligators and you need help and you're trying to, you know, undo what's been done previously, right? There's so much value from budgeting. Like we've covered so many topics in this short 45 minute conversation that are value add to an organization or to an individual, right? So I think one of the things I really love about the space, and I hit on it in the beginning, is making contacts and connections with, you know, again, why you and I are connected. We've done work together. We've hung out at Beer ISAC and been at conferences and actually done work and done things outside of just OT cyber as well, from shooting guns and hanging out of helicopters and other things. That's a whole nother conversation. But there's just so much here in this space and in this industry. It's fastly growing. It needs more. We need more people. We need more people, you know, fighting the good fight, having these conversations. It's why I do this podcast. It's why you are teaching at SANS, right? Is because it's important. And because these conversations and the content that we're talking about is so important, that it needs to be continually had by multiple people. I'm not the smartest person in the world. I'm not the person that's done all the things, but I have a little bit of knowledge and I like talking about these things and I love bringing on folks like you to have additional conversations. So, well, where are you going to be? How can people find you? All the things, man.
Well, I mean, first I want to kind of give my input on the last. There's so much data out there. You know, it's just becoming faster and faster. I mean, and we've got deep fakes. You know, that doesn't freaking help. Thanks. Thanks.
No kidding,
everybody. Thanks, trolls. You know, what people need to do is, you know, if they start feeling overwhelmed, information overload and stuff like that, you just got to step back and have that process of, doing critical thinking. Nothing has to be done right now, like right this moment. I mean, of course, there are some things we're OT, there's some immediate action decisions that need to be made. We need to shorten up that OODA loop. However, we still need data, you know, to make decisions. And so stepping back, trying to figure out what's important and not doing knee-jerk reactions. It's the knee-jerk reactions that really get make it worse, make the situation worse, delay response. And so, you know, I highly encourage everybody that if you don't understand something, if something seems weird, if everybody's saying, "Oh my God, do this right now," take a step back. you know, like let's chill out just a little bit. Let's see if we can get a little bit more information and go from there. From my standpoint, I'm trying to get back on LinkedIn a little bit more. So, you know, send the message out a little bit. Look, at 613, AI research, family, all of this other stuff is really kind of put a cramp on my messaging out there. I mean, heck, Tom and I did a podcast and we never even told anybody we're doing a podcast. That stuff out there, like, you know, it was hilarious. But yeah, so I'm, you know, I'm out on LinkedIn. I usually do a lot of talks. I'm actually teaching a couple workshops for NRECA, which is the Electrical Cooperative, one of their tech conferences. So I'll be there teaching a couple workshops around some of the stuff we've been talking about. Teaching at SANS. Just got back from S4. And I think that's the last conference that I have scheduled personally is... besides doing some of my SAN stuff, that takes a lot of my time, but that's also why I try to stay on LinkedIn. Should be seeing more messaging from me out there.
Outstanding. We'll definitely reach out to Don if you have questions. Definitely go take his class. Lots of really great stuff with SANS. Just had, you know, Dean Parsons on a couple of times in the last couple of months talking about the five critical controls and all that type of stuff.
He's awesome.
It's so important. I've never had every SANS person I've ever met is just super knowledgeable and super giving and super willing to open the kimono and share their knowledge and all the things, which is why it's so value added. And so many people want to be there, right? And be part of it. So thanks again, brother. I appreciate you being here. Put all the things in the show notes. Definitely connect with Don, reach out with him. He's not bad. I do have some crayons I have to give you. But okay. That'll come next time.
I got plenty. I got a new there box.
Thanks again, Don. I appreciate it, man. Have a good one, buddy.
Thanks for joining us on Protect It All, where we explore the crossroads of IT and OT cybersecurity. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay ahead in this ever-evolving field. Until next time.